Hi, this is Jonathan Paley of the Nervous Eaters, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farm's WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell Leather Items of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
ACRA, Hudson, Catskill.
Good evening. You're listening to Tech Talk with Bill and Ralph, or Ralph and Bill, be that as it may. Good evening, Ralph. Ralph, do you have the call-in numbers on you?
I have them, but they're secret, and I'm not sure you're cleared for them. But we have a caller already, so, and by the way, I think you should make the announcement that this is our apotheosis.
You go ahead and do it, since you're apotheosing us.
Well, you're apothecary, but before we do, let's welcome our first caller. Bill, did you happen to catch? No, let's not welcome our first caller.
There is no caller. The call-in number is 518-697-7400. 718-697-7400 or 518-622, and if you could raise it up a little bit, 622-2598.
2598, WGXC Tech Talk. And we are concluding our run for glory with this show. We have thoroughly enjoyed elevating the consciousness of the mid to upper Hudson Valley about all things tech. I have, and Bill, it's been a tug of war, Bill lowering the consciousness, me raising the consciousness. We've essentially managed to fight each other to a draw, but we are going to be making room for new and other shows beginning in the year 2021, assuming we survive, assuming that America survives that long.
Smod, sweet Smod, come and save us.
Yes, the sweet meteor of doom.
Sweet meteor of doom, you got it.
Yes, Smod.
Yeah, it's definitely coming. So you did the announcement, and I have our final TikTok update. And I think I can stand firm in this. Final TikTok update.
Or at least sit.
It is not going anywhere. For all of you people that were sweating buckets, not that I was, and all of you other people who were worried about our privacy, like the government was, TikTok doesn't appear to be going anywhere. So, bravo, bravissimo. Are you happy about that, Ralph?
Well, I've actually spent all of about 30 seconds on TikTok, but let me tell you the several reasons why I am happy about that. First of all, I believe in letting the letting enterprising individuals, wherever they're based, America, Germany, China, Korea, wherever, they should be encouraged rather than discouraged to innovate and generate things. And when these things become successful, my initial instinct is always that the government should not step in and wreck them, like they're trying to do with Facebook now, and like they're probably going to try to do with Google, and like your president, what was his name? The president
Reagan.
Trump. President. Your president disselect Donald Trump seemed to single-handedly be attempting to bully this very successful, very popular company with which millions of people thoroughly enjoyed using. So that's the first reason. I just don't think that the government should bully enterprising people who are succeeding in providing goods and services that people actually like. Second reason is that my elder son, Michael, is experimenting around with TikTok and has had some very, very interesting successes with it. And so I just the same way I don't like Senator Josh Hawley or Senator Ted Cruz trying to pull the rug out from under us, who are under people like you and me, Bill, who are using Facebook to advocate for a cause, in our case, the Capitalist League. And I just don't really like it when ambitious U.S. senators are pandering to Neanderthal-type Luddites who are masquerading, or reactionaries who are masquerading as conservatives, by attempting to pull the rug out from under fine, enterprising people like me and even you. So I think that the idea of mucking about with these digital media platforms is just fundamentally wrong, both as a utilitarian and as a moral matter. So I have, and the third thing is some millions of Americans and more around the world are thoroughly enjoying themselves on TikTok. My son, Michael, who is learning to master it, tells me that unlike, say, Facebook, you can't buy advertising. You can't promote your TikTok product. You can only achieve a vast following simply by the quality of the material that you are producing. And I find that to be really interesting and admirable. Not that I'm against advertising. We do it. I know that Wave Farm is nonprofit, so they don't do it. And I say, let 1,000 flowers bloom. Let 1,000 schools of thought contend. So just call me Chairman Ralph.
Well, I mean, yes, we do have a call. It is Wendy from New Rochelle.
Wendy from New Rochelle. Welcome. Hey, before you ask us your question, I have a question for you. Can you hear us?
I can.
Whatever happened to Old Rochelle?
I believe Old Rochelle retired.
Old Rochelle retired to be replaced by New Rochelle.
That's correct.
Rochelle. Okay, well, thank you for clarifying that for us.
We will have newer Rochelle.
And the newest Rochelle. And even newer, new and improved Rochelle.
That's right.
Okay. Well, welcome, New Rochelle, Wendy from New Rochelle. What is your question?
My question is, should I buy Bitcoin? And I'll take my answer offline if you don't mind.
Okay. Should you buy Bitcoin is the question. Bill, you have opinions. As Ivy Baker Priest, the Treasurer of the United States under Eisenhower, like to say, often wrong, never in doubt. So you, as the legitimate successor to Ivy Baker Priest, Bill, what is your often wrong but never in doubt opinion about whether Wendy from New Rochelle should buy Bitcoin?
If you like the lottery, go ahead and buy Bitcoin, because the market or the betting forces at work on Bitcoin right now are just as stable as any other form of gambling.
Oh no, they're less stable.
And just as really, and just as unpredictable.
They are definitely unpredictable. So here's the deal with
Bitcoin now is at 27,000. I got in at 4,000. I'm doing good. I'm selling. I'm getting out. This is just my opinion. Obviously, I'm not an expert in any way, shape, or form. Nobody, please, nobody ever listened to me. Not that anybody ever does. But yeah, I'm not a. I moved all my crypto stuff over into doing stocks now, and I'm having fun with that.
Okay. Well, I was given one Bitcoin back about 5 years ago when it was selling for $400. I was given it as a gift, and it's sitting in my Coinbase account. And
it's worth $27,000. You could buy me a really nice lunch in Rochelle, France.
I could. I'm not going to, but I could.
You should. You should.
Well, I should, but I won't. Least. Yes. So the deal here is when this was given, and by the way, it might have been $325. When this Bitcoin was given to me as a gift, I was told by the giver that it was going to be worth $25,000 within 3 years. That was 5 years ago. It got almost up to $25,000 within 3 years. It got up to $19,000. And then the price of it collapsed very quickly from $19,000 to down to about $3,000 or $4,000. So here's the answer to Wendy's question. You only want to buy something if it's going to become more valuable. If it's going to be, and then sell it and make a profit. Presumably, people do not invest or speculate in order to lose money. And so the underlying question to her question is Bitcoin going to go up in value or up in market price, since value is a freighted word, or is it going to go back down? And if so, when? The short answer is nobody knows. There is no absolute. Bitcoin is a perfectly speculative asset, meaning there is no mechanism to do legitimate price discovery on what Bitcoin should be intrinsically worth based upon things like its yield or its ROI, its return on investment. When you buy a stock, there are different ways that there's something called price discovery. And by the way, market prices will often depart temporarily from the market, from the organic market clearing price. They'll go high, they'll overshoot, they'll undershoot. And people who are sophisticated about price discovery and determining what the best intrinsic value is relative to its yield, its risk, and its other assets, will swoop in and buy when it goes beneath its organic market clearing price, and they will sell or even sell short when it goes above it. There is absolutely no way to do that for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is useless. It can be used to create distributed ledgers, which are forms of in encrypted databases that are held by thousands of PCs. But it, as it happens, every Bitcoin is made up of 1 million tiny little mini-me's called Satoshis. And each one of those million Satoshis can create a distributed ledger just as well as a whole big fat Bitcoin. And so when people tell you that the supply of Bitcoin is limited, that's technically true. It's limited to, I think, 21 million Bitcoins, some of which have been lost forever already. And so there is a cap on the number in the supply. But in terms of the functionality of the Bitcoin, there is effectively an infinite number of Satoshis that can perform the role of the Bitcoin. So functionally speaking, there is no practical limit on the amount of these bits of software that are out there. So I am myself dubious about the concept that there is a limited supply. Technically, yes. Operationally, no. So value is determined by the combination of supply and demand. We have a an operationally infinite supply of Bitcoins, and we have no way of knowing what the demand is going to be. The Bitcoin maximalists believe that Bitcoin is just at the very, very early stages of its life, and there is going to be, for multiple reasons, all speculative, that there is going to become a massive demand for Bitcoin. So when it was given to me at $400, Bill bought it at $4,000. It's now at $27,000, down from $28,000 yesterday or the day before. There are people out there who believe that that the price of Bitcoin is going to go up to $250,000 or even $1 million in the next few years. And they're just guessing, but it could be. And if that's the case, it would be really, really smart to buy as much Bitcoin as you could at $27,000 and then go and sell it for 10 times or 40 times as much. When I was given that Bitcoin worth $400, I said to my giver, you know, it's going up to $25,000, like you say, Matt. I want 39 more, because then I would be a millionaire. I would sell them net $1 million. But if it's going down to 25 cents, which it equally well could have, then I'll stand pat. Unfortunately for me, I stood pat. I didn't buy any more when I could afford to do so at 400. If I had even picked up, you know, 10 of them, then I'd be sitting on a $250,000 stash. So as the old saying goes, Wendy from New Rochelle, you pays your nickel and you takes your choice.
Wow. All that, which I encapsulated much more briefly and more succinctly as, if you like gambling.
Far more succinctly.
Bitcoin.
And oversimplistically. Right. Yes.
If you like gambling
and you can afford to lose everything, then go ahead. Have fun.
I made Bill money does. Off of cryptocurrencies going up and down by selling and buying, and you know, I actually made okay. I did okay. Now I'm doing a
which is why you retired to Blossburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is, you got it. I retired under
the lap of luxury.
I am in the lap of luxury. My wife will tell you that. She can hear me. Isn't that right, wife? Just say yes. Yes, she agrees.
Okay.
So you were talking about 230, getting rid of 230, and the government going after the platforms. But you know what? The government has got nothing on Apple, and Apple is about to whack Facebook right between the eyes. At least that's what they're squealing like. Are you familiar with this, Banco?
You texted me or maybe emailed me an article that you read on the interwebs. And if you read it on the internet, it has to be true.
Anyways, what do you think of that? So basically Apple is saying no more targeting and all this kind of stuff for your advertising, which I can tell you I heavily use targeting on advertising, so it's going to be a real pain in the tushy for me, but I saw this coming because I knew that everything was heading in that direction.
Bill,
evidently, Facebook did not
Bill,
see this coming.
Bill, you can't say tushy on the radio.
I can say tushy.
Oh, my God. There you go again.
Anyways, if we could stick with the subject, Mr. Banco.
Yes, go on. You're talking... You've out, as we say in football, Bill, you've outrun your pass coverage by using a bunch of terms that you haven't established the reference for.
I don't have to.
Nobody, myself including, understands what you're getting at.
Shorthand version of it. Apple is whacking Facebook between the eye with a bunch of requirements on advertising standards that will cost them billions of dollars.
It will cost Apple billions of dollars?
No, it'll cost Facebook billions of dollars.
Well, you just said them, so how was I to know? I was going to go, what a great public-spirited thing for Apple to lose billions of dollars just tweaking their rival.
Just on principle.
just on principle, just for the fun of it.
No, I haven't drilled down deeper, but my guess is Apple's going to make money off of this somehow. The point being that, you know, we've talked about this before, that the greatest danger to big tech is big tech.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. If I did not immerse myself in the article that you sent me because I was actually working for a living, unlike Bitcoin billionaires like you who don't actually have to work for a living anymore. So it basically said that the current model on which Facebook is based, business model, which Facebook is based, which is give away all of the fun for free. And then based upon what you learn from the 2.7 billion people who come and play in your playground, give some information about them. Are they male or female? Are they young or old? What, you know, what are their favorite movies? What are their favorite news sources? What are their favorite, where do their tastes run? From collecting as much of that kind of information as they can, which is far less than most people believe, but it's not insubstantial. Then they can tell people who want to sell things, goods and services, who is most likely to buy them based upon the information or data that they pick up about how we play on their platform. And that's all, you know, that's a good thing to, as we call target, or I would rather say, custom craft the offerings, the commercial offerings they send to us, the advertisement, to things that we're authentically interested in. You know, you don't really want to be selling, you don't want to be selling Jack Daniels in Utah because Mormons don't drink alcohol. And so it's a waste of your advertising dollar to be trying to sell whiskey to Mormons or ice cream to Eskimos. So telling them enough about us so that people can custom craft their advertising and their products and direct it to those of us. Let's say somebody is selling, vintage military helmets. Okay. Then
you're the guy.
They want to bombard you with ads for their great offerings of these vintage military helmets because you in your Michigan away have owned dozens of these, right? How many military helmets do you own, Bill?
I probably don't own more than 70.
70. Well, when World War IV gets here, man, you're going to be ready. Do you have one of those pickle Gruber helmets that the Prussians used to?
Pickle Hob. I have 17 of those.
I challenge you. If you do, hold one up to your microphone to prove it.
They're not near me, but you can. Well, there's one on the
don't
shelf.
Don't you have a wife?
There's one on the shelf there.
Can't she hand you one? Or just well, as long no, as she doesn't no, like
you
accidentally.
See another one there on the shelf, the eagle.
Oh well, yeah, but that's not fair to our listeners because they don't have videos of this. Okay,
that's okay.
So but that's the business model that Facebook uses. We're going to learn about you by following the kind of things that interest you, which we can do without in an unintrusive way. You can call it surveillance capitalism, but I think of it as simply attempting, you know, they will give you this wonderful experience, cost them billions of dollars to produce it on Facebook for free, as long as you are giving the privilege to them to allow advertisers to come and focus on sending you advertisements for things that you really love to buy. But Apple says, yet, comrade. Apple says, this is not a good thing. This is a violation of your privacy. And we are going to configure our services, the sort of iTunes store, it's not called that anymore, Apple videos, Apple audios, podcasts, and so forth, and so on. We are going to configure it in ways that that will disable you, Facebook, from charging advertisers for the data about the people who would like to buy it. I'm not 100% clear on the TikTok of that. You should pardon the expression.
Pardon the pun.
But that, I think, is the general concept. And apparently Facebook is fighting back by taking out these fairly expensive full-page ads in the newspapers. And so the commentator whose article we read about this, or I read about this, says Facebook is sweating it. They know that this is an existential threat to their business model. And so this is kind of, and they've known it. They know it. They've known it for some time. They feel very vulnerable because they are very vulnerable. And this is going to lead to the end of the Facebook on the business model that it's currently operating. The future of the internet will be that people, instead of give away products for free, like say Google does too, and then charging people to advertise to you based upon what they learn about you, that the future of the internet business model will be paywalls, so that you'll pay, like I do with Medium. I like the articles that are posted at Medium. I want to read more than five a month, so I pay them $5 a month so I can read an unlimited number of articles. They have 100 million people who visit them every month, and they have a couple of million people like me, maybe more, who are willing to pay $5 a month.
Yeah,
which is enough to make them rich and to pay their people, pay their contributors and pay their staff pretty adequately.
The interesting thing is, if paywall ended, I mean, if Facebook ended up doing some sort of a tiered model where they had like the traditional advertising where you just basically advertising channels, like, okay, we'll put your ad in groups related to this subject, which is one way to reach your audience. So they might have a free level of service and then a paid level of service. But what would be interesting is if they started having people pay to use the service, how would that affect their moderation policies? Probably they would feel a little bit more, it might be more user-centric. But the third option, which you haven't discussed, is a tracking system that you opt into and you actually get paid to share your to share your information with advertisers. You own your data, but you can give it to advertisers who pay you for it. And you give it to enough people, you might make a couple bucks.
And a couple bucks is exactly right. I've watched this model on the Brave browser. The Brave browser is another upstart challenger on the internet. And the Brave browser is basically saying, hey, why should Google make all the money from what they learn about what you are Googling and sell bushel baskets full of people, people like you, to advertisers? They don't know who you are personally. They just know that you have a certain profile and that you're interested.
Keep this going. I have a little bit of an emergency with my dog for 2 minutes. Hold on.
I take 2.5 minutes, Bill, because I'm just that kind of guy. And the Brave browser, when I actually did the research, they said, we will pay you to browse on us. And I did the math on that. And guess what? It turned out that even though I'm a power browser who spends hours a day browsing and researching information on the internet, when I shifted over to try Brave, which I didn't like because there were there are people who love it, but in my case, there were too many things that it blocked out on various websites. I don't even remember exactly which websites it was giving me blank responses to, but it turned out that even I as a power user would be making something like, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 bucks a month from my browsing on Brave. So it was a trivial sum. Bill, I was just pointing out that when I was...
I heard you, and that's the point, is that it's a trivial sum, so I don't know if that's going to work. I don't think
it's going to work.
I've been saying the paywall model is the future.
Well, I hope you're wrong, because I like stuff for free.
Yeah, who doesn't?
And I am more than happy to let
all these people whine and cry and fuss, and they want their privacy, and they want their privacy. And I get it. Although it's overblown concern, like just because an advertiser knows you like helmets, it doesn't mean that they have your social security number and, you know, everything
Bill,
else.
My advice to you, Bill, my advice to you before we welcome Hank from Hastings is if you care about your privacy, stop browsing the internet in your birthday suit. Hank from Hastings.
I can't believe you said that.
Come on aboard.
Hello. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Hank, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you. The last time I talked to you, I asked you about this news we were hearing and about the data breach that seems to have affected several government agencies, but they're not sure how and what the extent is.
Yeah, what was the name of that data
solar
breach?
Flare or something?
SolarWinds. Yes, Hank.
Was that the name of the breach or the name of the company that was supposed to be keeping security? I didn't quite get it, but anyway, the reason I'm calling your reply to me. That, as I understood it, last week, was don't worry; it's probably not a very big deal, and we kind of left it at that. And I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and said, "What? How do you know?" So that's why I'm coming back to you to say how does any of us know whether to be really worried about this or I'll just let you. Kind of enlighten me on that.
Fair enough. Bill, you used to be a spy for the U.S. Navy. I do understand that the phrase naval intelligence is an oxymoron, but since you have a professional background from your days of tracking Soviet submarines as at the denouement of the Cold War, do you have an opinion about this? I assume you do.
Well, see, the basic thing is when somebody hears hack, they think hacked is hacked, right? But there are degrees of hack. What did they get? Did they get access to... Okay, so they got a point of entry to your system, or did they control parts of your system? Did they... were they able to get into the broader network beyond just the system, but only in read-only mode, or did they get into the broad network and get write access... where they could actually control things like access, or did they actually get administrative control? As I understand, this was a very low level, like
it was a data breach rather than a malware,
and it wasn't the most sensitive data. That's my understanding. Now, I wasn't there. I didn't see the actual event, and I don't know if
I thought you were behind it.
No, not today. Not this time.
Not this time. Okay.
No.
Up your game, Collier.
He has to say that,
Yes, he does have to say that, but we don't have to believe it.
Yeah, but I mean, I just
the point
what I'm
he's making
for
is
kind of
this was a
general.
This was a
general
this was
idea
a this was,
how to evaluate something like this. For an intelligent, but I'm not part of the. I'm not part of the intelligence network. You know what I'm saying? You have any
yes,
clues?
But that's exactly what you would say if you were part of the intelligence network.
Of course. Of course it is.
So forgive my skepticism there, Hank. Look,
here's the thing. SolarWinds says 18,000 customers were impacted. But what they don't tell us is which stage of impact these customers actually experienced.
Right.
So we don't have enough data. Nobody's telling us enough data. If they went to stage four where they have administrative control over the network, this is a serious hack. Right. But if it was a stage one or zero,
right? If it's a peeping Tom, who's just looking at a bunch of irrelevant data,
then it's not a big deal. I mean, I had a website and one part of the website got hacked where they could read files
and they were able to change one program in the back end of the site, which wasn't a major program, is easily identified, and they were out of there within 5 minutes of getting in there. Somebody would say, oh my goodness, you're hacked. Yeah, but no harm, no foul. But on the other hand, if you go to your website and you can't even get into your own website, and it says something like, Bill is a bad guy, and he wears fishnet stockings and nothing more walking down the streets of
What a hideous picture. Could we use a different...
Horrible. I mean, it's like a freak show, horror show. You know, well, then I think that's going to be a real dramatic story. What I'm not seeing from the SolarWinds hack is really anything definitive. Everything I see on it, it's just pure speculation. So it could be serious. Yeah. I don't think it is, because I'm just not hearing the noise and I'm not seeing the impact. And I don't think, given that these 18,000 customers weren't just, you know, mom and pop in their little computer. My guess is if this was really serious and they really got to stage four with a bunch of people, the hue and cry would be massive. But we're not hearing a hue and cry. Does it mean I don't know.
There are real bad things going on out there, Hank. There are ransomware attackers who go into hospitals and freeze their data and say, pay us $1 million or $5 million in Bitcoin, or people will die because we will keep their data frozen.
Yeah, okay? That just happened, right?
And not just hospitals, municipalities, school systems, and so forth, where there's really seriously bad threats and bad consequences, by the way, of like extortion and blackmail that are actually happening. They are not infrequent. And it's a really good reason for all of our listeners to keep their data backed up securely, either on the cloud or on an external hard drive, or preferably on both. If you have anything that you care about on your computer, like, say, your family photos, and it would be really sad if it got...
That's not really, Mike. You know, I mean, of course I would like my little world, the little world that I keep inside my computer, to be protected. But I'm asking, my concern is if, you know, like the power grid, for example.
Right. That's vulnerable, but it doesn't seem to be. I was reading an article in, I think it's Wired, which is my favorite publication about all things digital, about how somebody inserted 30 lines of code that was that actually blew up a power station. It destroyed $1 million piece of equipment. And that is, you know, that's concerning. It can be used for good. Israel used that to destroy Iran's atomic centrifuges, thereby putting Iran's ability to get itself nuclear armed to a grinding halt, and buying the world an additional 3, 4, 5 years of safety from one less nuclear power. That said, it really is a dangerous world out there, the world of cybersecurity. We really should be investing more in it. SolarWinds seems like more of an embarrassment because all of these hotshot federal agencies found their data breached, and everybody wants to assume that, you know, everything that Uncle Sam does is secure and as safe as the golden Fort Knox. But that's just not so. So it caused embarrassment to a number of federal agencies, big agencies like the Department of Commerce. But in terms of actual damage done to them, there doesn't seem to be any. Are there serious hackings as opposed to data breaches going on the internet? Yes, there are.
I'll tell you what bothers me is that they keep saying they. I don't know. You know, what I keep hearing on the news is that they say more or less we don't even know what the extent or nature of the damage, if any, or the loss. Doesn't that, you know?
Right? And if they did, they might not tell us. Let me just say this about that, and then let's make some room for the next caller, Hank. Although I must say, this was an exceptionally good question, and that is, the government and the big corporate institutions should absolutely be investing more heavily in cybersecurity. End of story. And I'm embarrassed that the Trump administration was so careless as to make itself vulnerable to a breach of this magnitude. Hopefully, it's just a wake-up call, and hopefully the Congress will be motivated now to appropriate more money to secure our cyber our cyber infrastructure. And hopefully Jeff Bezos will be putting more money into Amazon Web Services, and Google will be upping its game to make itself even more secure. That said, I never worry about Google being hacked. I never worry about Amazon being hacked. And I don't worry about Facebook being hacked, because they do invest lavishly in security. They know that their viability as companies and the trust of the public depends on them being very hardened. I wish I had the same confidence in the federal government and the state and local governments as I do in Amazon, as I do in Google.
Right, right. Well, let's hope it's one of these things where it's somebody, you know, it's like kind of a friendly criminal who says, I did this to show you guys where you need to step up your game.
Oh, my goodness. I've seen so many movies like that. The friendly criminal who tries to prove, and then it causes a huge disaster anyway. But with regard to being worried about hacks and the power grid, I mean, I myself am getting solar and wind for my house, getting a battery bank. I'm going full sustainability over here, baby.
That's a very nice euphemism for prepper.
I'm working on it,
Bill.
I am not a prepper. Just
got it. Not that kind of prepper.
For the food in my basement, that doesn't make me a prepper.
It makes you either a prepper or a Mormon. But Hank, thank you for calling. Let's make room for another caller.
Pleasure. Thank you too. Happy New Year to you both. All the
Happy
best.
New
thank
Year
you,
to
Hank.
You.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bill, I can't believe you're denying being a prepper.
I'm not a prepper. I never thought of prepping per se. I started to prepare for the pandemic last January, February. Remember, I told you.
I remember you sent me an N95 mask because you heard about it.
I did.
About 2 months before anybody else heard about it. Of course, instead of investing heavily in N95 mask companies and making yourself a bloody fortune, you bought a bunch of N95 masks for your friends.
But I did.
Okay.
I didn't make a fortune, though, because I didn't have a lot of money, but I did make some money.
Okay. I'm glad you're a war profiteer.
I'm not stupid. Don't answer that.
No comment.
That's a better deal. You said you wanted to make
Farouk from Farouk? North Carolina, assuming NC means North Carolina.
Farouk!
Gone to Carolina in my mind. Welcome, Farouk. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me again, gentlemen. Great to speak with you. I have a, you know, what prompted me to call tonight is what I think is a matter of serious consideration. So it's usually I call in with questions that both of you give me great wisdom on, but this one in particular has me concerned for the welfare of our kids, and it's going to press upon you.
Uh-oh, his kids just pulled the plug on Farouk.
I'm at the edge of my seat. Come on, Farouk.
Farouk is toying with you, Bill, just like he was when he said you gave him great answers.
Well, that was his honest side.
He was just buttering you up
for the kill.
Yes, he was lulling you into a false sense of security.
I hear little noises.
All right, we have another caller, Mr. Yes, I Would.
Go ahead, caller.
All right. This is Michael from Portland, Maine. Sorry, can you hear me?
I can barely hear you. It may be my connection. But go ahead and ask your question, and I will try to answer it as honestly as possible.
Okay, I'll do my best. So this is a very technical. What makes a computer faster or slower? Like, when you're using a computer and it's loading, let's say it's loading software or loading a website, why does it need to load? Isn't it a computer? Shouldn't all those processes just happen instantaneously? Or is there a reason why these things take so long? Like, what's going on, and what causes a computer that's faster to be faster?
Well, it has to do with your processing speed, with the amount of RAM. And believe it or not, you know, you can look at two computers that look identical, and one's got a really great processor, really fast, and one has a slower one. It also can have to do with how you've configured your background programs and whether or not you have things that automatically start up and don't automatically start up. For the most part, your computer should be optimized when you get it, unless it's an Apple, which there's no way to optimize an Apple because they suck. So,
well, actually, there's a way to optimize an Apple because they are born optimized and they optimize themselves. So one doesn't have to optimize. I bet you drive a standard transmission, don't you, Collier? I bet automatic transmission is a little too.
Everybody's stealing my car.
Is a little too scary for you. A little too technologically advanced.
Well, but in reality, there are so many different reasons and factors why your computer could be slow or fast. It really is. The three main factors are: what programs are you running, what kind of processor do you have, and how much RAM do you have. Now, if you're connected to the internet.
What I'm sort of asking, though, I do understand that. I mean, I've had computers for most of my life. But what I'm asking is, what is actually happening? I mean, is the computer doing something with code? Like, what's the actual process that is making these things take so long? Like, is software communicating with each other? Are they sending messages? Because in my mind, if it's a machine, if it's a robot, why doesn't it just happen completely instantaneously? What's the actual process that's going on in there that's in a slower computer or even a fast computer that's just loading something that's taking up the time while we're waiting for it?
Well, there's an actual disk that's actually spinning and turning, and it has to find the sector. It's a physical thing.
Okay.
I mean, that's the key thing. So if you have multiple things running, it's got to find all of them, get them all online, and then turn it on, which can take a bit. It's an, I mean,
okay.
I, you know, now, so that you, no... now that you're mentioning this, I'm thinking that the latest and greatest thing is going to be, we're not going to have any of that kind of stuff. We're just going to be nanotubes that are like instantaneous connections.
Yeah. But,
So there are no elves in there or anything powering the machine, or like a hamster running on a wheel or gremlins.
There are in Bill's, because he actually uses a PC, which are elf driven, unlike a Mac, which actually uses things like computer chips and semiconductors and stuff like that. It's a lot less expensive, but it's not really humane to the elves. If I don't know if humane applies to elves, but it's kind of like elf trafficking. So it's why Bill consistently ends up getting coal in his stockings on Christmas.
Last Christmas.
Ralph,
in Santa's workshop, and they were asking for better conditions. I think it should apply for elves as well.
But Bill, my hard drive is a disk. It's a hard disk, actually. And it does rotate. But that
right.
is where.
But that's where all of the programs are. That's where they have to find everything.
Yes, but that's just where the data is stored and where the programs
live. Yes, but it has to be physically accessed. A little thing has to.
Let me just get you educated on computers a little bit. The computing power takes place in something called a computer chip, CHIP.
Yeah,
that's like, that's where the RAM.
That's why I talked about the relative speed of the processor versus the disk. If you have a very fast processor, that's almost instantaneous. It's no problem to access the disk. But if you have a slower processor, or if you're putting a lot of different programs on at the same time, that's got to physically access it on the disk. That's what will go slower.
Okay. So, Michael from Portland.
Yes.
There is a chip inside every computer called the CPU or central processing unit that actually is actually the logic chip that does the thinking for the computer. The RAM, that stands for random access memory, and that is what essentially holds the programs that are in use in terms of the process. And then there's the hard drive that is where your computer programs live and where your data is stored, unless it's stored on what's called the cloud. And depending upon the power of your CPU, your central processing unit, that primarily and the power and how much RAM you've got, whether you've got 4, 16, 64, 128, Bill's got 4. That will depend upon how fast it executes.
Ralph, we have another call for Rook, and he has a really important question. He got knocked off. It would be great to get him on.
Michael, does that answer your question? Because we have just 3 more minutes. Hello, Michael from Portland. Did you know?
Hello.
Okay.
That did answer my question, and I'm very grateful for all the great answers, I want to say.
Well,
not just tonight, but the other nights as well.
Bill's, adequate answers. Got it. Hey, we got to open up for Farouk, who got assimilated by the board, but now he's escaped and is back. Thank you, Michael, for calling in. May you live long and prosper. Farouk.
I was about to say that to you. Even joking. All right. Have a good night.
Good night, Michael.
Okay, Farouk, let's get right to your question.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry I got cut off there. But what I was calling about is a recent article I read, and it has to do with online education and the access children have to digital medium. I have an 8-year-old daughter, and one of the correlations that the article made, and it got me fairly alarmed, is I'm already concerned about the massive amount of digital technology that my daughter has access to and our children have access to. And what some of the studies I've read in the past suggest, at least, is that the more exposure the children have to this type of medium and digital technology as a whole, it impacts the way that they behave in the long run. And you add to that now tens of millions of children going to school virtually. The article suggested that there could be some serious concerns about the psychological impact on the children and how much of this digital exposure, impacts their outlook. And then there was a couple of other specific things I wanted to ask to you about this over this general observation. One is that there are contracts that school systems are forging with technology providers. And I'm concerned about what type of contracts how well these contracts are written and in favor of whom. And then when you couple that with the way social media makes money, mining information and giving consumers very limited information as to how they source and mine information about them and then sell that information, will our children now be exposed to some of the same type of data breaches and other concerns? Is their personal information now becoming potentially susceptible to evildoers out there that can misuse this information? So it's a broad concept here I'm trying to cover, but I'm doing it quickly. I'm concerned about the children's welfare and well-being with access to even more digital technology now. And is their long-term safety jeopardized by these contracts and how data will be managed and stored and potentially even mined and shared down the road.
For Root, because we don't have a whole lot of time, the first thing I say, every school district probably has their own contract. You need to go to the school district website, review the contract, find out who the school board members are. A lot of them, you can find their name, number. Actually call them. Ask them these kind of direct questions. Go to a school board meeting. There isn't one answer. My guess is there's school districts that are all over this and that are really worried about the privacy of the kids. The other thing that you touched on is the long-term impact of kids being in this virtual environment and what impact will it have on their mentality. I've always felt that our society does not see mental health in a real concrete way. And as long as you don't have a high fever, you're fine. I know when I grew up, mental health was always a secondary thought to everybody. And that turned out just fine. But
that's a debatable point.
Yeah, that's debatable. So I think you have valid concerns, but you really have to address it with your school district, because I am absolutely certain that there are school districts that have done a bang-up job, a great job of addressing these issues, and there are some that the school board are Luddites, and they have no idea how they're getting raked over the coals. Over to you, Ralph.
Well, Bill, I'm sorry you've missed the mark once again. So it seems like a sad way to go out on our final show.
Don't worry about it. He always has to downgrade me to upgrade himself, but go on, Ralph.
Okay, there is a group of there's a network of schools called the Steiner Schools that have long had the philosophy, based upon the work of Rudolf Steiner, that kids should not be exposed to electronics until they are either well into high school or maybe out of high school. So they raise these kids without computers, without TV, without radio. God forbid, without radio. And I've known some people who've gone through Steiner schools. You know, they don't seem harmed by the fact, but they also don't seem to be in any way improved by it, at least in any way that I can notice. I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm just saying, Farouk, I believe your concerns are overblown. And both the kids' exposure to the, or even immersion in the digital world to the extent that they are, and the potential for data breaches and the harm that could come from that. Okay, somebody gets into the school and discovers that your kid got a B- in spelling in the second quarter. It's not likely to be prejudicial to her future. And so the amount of fear and anxiety that's associated with computers, whether it's the actual use of them as a learning tool or the potential for data breaches and breaches in privacy, strikes me as not wrong, but entirely overblown.
So I didn't miss the mark. I just disagreed with you. That's all. I get it. No, I get that.
It's synonymous, Bill. It's just synonymous.
You need to run for office, Ralph, so you can always be right.
I'm too lazy to run for office. I might walk for office someday if I can find one close enough. Well, thank you very much, Farouk. I hope either, you know, take your... You pays your nickel and you takes your choice. I hope either Bill's fear-mongering and hysteria or my laid-back chillaxing.
I'm not fear-mongering. I'm saying you should look at the contract. I've actually been read up a little on this. There are some school districts that did some really stupid things with these contracts, and there are some that did really good things. Every school district is different. You got to look at the contract and ask questions of them.
You're a man with way too much time on your hands, Bill.
I am a man of many talents.
Hats. Many hats. 70, to be precise.
No, that's just helmets. We don't want to talk about the hats.
We need the hats
out of this.
Hats are out of this.
They're innocent.
Hey, we are running.
We are counting down.
Time to wrap it up.
Thank you, Ralph, for
the privilege of talking to you on Tech Talk here on WGXC in Accra. And thank you all. Thank you, Bill, for your manifold contributions and your spreading of shade wherever you go.
Oh, thank you, Ralph, for not being as smart as Bill. This has been Tech Talk with Bill and Ralph.